Mr. Cameron, Reel 9. You now left your anti-aircraft unit and you were sent to number 2 Infantry Reinforcement Training Depot, 2IRTD.
That's right.
At El Qasim.
El Qasim.
What do you remember about your arrival there? This was going to the infantry. You didn't.
We knew then it was going to be. I think they'd been asked what we preferred or something. Or we'd been told that it was maybe transfers to the infantry. I didn't mind that, and most of it we didn't mind. We had to go somewhere, the infantry was as good as anything. But we knew we were going to infantry because he sent us to the reinforcement training depot. Infantry reinforcement training. For us, this was refreshing and getting to know something about infantry tactics. Where, as artillerymen, we were basically. Very little to do with small arms and such. And we did quite an intensive training period, and especially a get-fit period. We were chasing around with a couple of places there, the big flea and the little flea, big hills, which we used to go chasing up and down in battle order with the rifle and bayonet and in the sunshine. We were getting the real sweat on. And then we were lectured and they were veterans, they were exited, and most of them had been probably knocked around in the desert campaign, but they knew their stuff and they could teach infantry tactics, weapon training and such. So they had a lot of lectures.
What sort of principles were they getting through to you?
Mainly how to handle the weapons and a bit field craft and such. But mainly learning the weapons, the 2-inch mortar, the Bren gun, the Sten, Tommy guns, we had Tommy's and Sten's, 36 grenade, a little bit bayonet drill.
Now, to take over then, did they teach you a bit about each of them, would they?
Yes, we used to get lectures on
them. Would you get the chance to fire them as well?
No, we didn't have a firing range.
So it was only theory.
It was a quick course. I didn't know it at the time, but there were probably a need of infantrymen by then.
So you wouldn't get to say fire the Sten or the Bren at that stage?
Not that I recollect. No. I had fired them before, of course, you know, various times. It's hard to mention when, but. We used to do a little bit of small arms courses, but they were intensive. But we had to do a real intensive course on small arms, because small arms were going to be a main weapon from then on. So we had to get familiar with them again. And tactics, and they were told about old groups, and, you know, the...
What did they tell you about O groups, for instance?
That started at the top where the colonel briefed the company commanders. The company commanders came back and briefed the platoon commanders. The platoon commanders came and briefed the section commanders and so on. But it never worked that way. Nobody told it out. But that was the idea. And of course, you were told how this worked with the lectures and things by the blokes who knew. It never worked in practice. You were just told you were moving, and that was it.
Anything else you were taught? It's only about a 3 or 4 week course, wasn't it?
Yes, we weren't there very long. I was keen on that. I must say, I was keen. I wanted to know, because I realised the more you got to know, the better chance you had. If you were going in the line, you'd be going in the real action. And there was a bloke, he was King's Royal Rifle Corps. That's what he was. And he had been with the 7th Army as an infantryman. And he had a lot of pamphlets and things. And I used to talk to him, especially on an evening, as you get in the sergeant's mess. And the only thing he could get there was he'd get lemonade and pine bottles of Guinness. So he's get a pint of gas and a half Guinness and half lemonade. And we used to sit and chat there. And has tried to dig his brains, you see, and he realised that I was wanting to know. And he left me quite a few pamphlets, small arms pamphlets, and I tried to get out of them what it could. It wasn't very satisfactory, but at least it was knowledge. It was more than what I knew before. I knew the basics of small arms, but to get, you know, into depth. So, you didn't get a pass out or anything like that. But at least, I suppose, they gave a report on me, you know, with capabilities and such. But that's, we were still there when I fiddled to get into the Dutch. I can't fiddle, but...
Now, tell me, but that was quite interesting before. How did you get into the Durhams?
Well, we were at this IRTD, and a pal of mine, Ian Shackleton, he came from Silverton, near Keithley in Yorkshire. And we were off duty at this particular time. I don't know where we were heading, but there was another camp somewhere which had a nappy of some description. I think it had something to do with the Air Force. But anyway, we were heading there, just and it was more or less a stretch of desert. You could see the place we were heading for in the distance. And there was a bloke coming towards us as we were walking across between the two camps. He gets about 40 yards from me, and I could see he had a colonel, and he had a Durham light up in the mansion. Now I'm a Durham. I'm a Durham man, you know. If I was going to be in the infantry, I fancied being a county regiment. So I spotted this. I says, I'm having a word with this boy, Jack. So anyway, we meet some guys, stop in front of him, soon a smart speaker. I explained to him, said, excuse me, sir, my name's Calvin, but I'm a Durham County man. I'm in the IRTD at present, training to transfer to the infantry. What chances of getting to my county regiment? So, oh, yes. Your name is what? Yeah. And you? Of course, that's what he said. Yeah, I'm ready. You know. So, he says, I'll see what I can do for you. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but this fella had just left the 16th Battalion Durhams. He was going on promotion. It was Lieutenant Colonel Johnny Preston, who had been CO for the 16th. And he had left, and Colonel Waddle had took over the 16th. So, I never saw Johnny Preston anymore, but when it came to posting, not only me and Shaq, but there was another dozen NCOs from 295 Battery, all finished up, posted to the 16th Battalion Durham Light Infantry. And that's how it came to be, and a lot of my mates in Durham's as well with me. I think I was to blame for that. I felt a bit guilty at times because there was half of them never came back, you know. And I did. Shaq was killed, and three or four who were posted with me, they were killed in action with the 16th at different times. That's how we got to the Durhams.
Yeah. Do you remember the journey out?
Not to deal about it, except that we didn't travel with the battalion. There was a Sergeant Green who picked us up from the IRTD, and he was 16 Battalion, and we travelled through transit camps. I can't see we were all in the sailed across. I don't know where we sailed from or where we landed at, but we landed in Italy and travelled in transit camps to join the 16th as a reinforcement lot, and I think that would be Bastardo.
So that would be, roughly speaking, in July 1944, according to this, to the 16th history.
Middle of 44, yeah.
Now, when you arrived, how were you made? Well, you were still a Lance Sergeant, were you?
I was a Lance Sergeant.
You hadn't been put down.
I was a Lance Sergeant then at the time. But something I had never thought of, never occurred to me, We'd been told before we left the artillery that we would keep our ranks. But that was fair enough. We were quite satisfied with that. We got to the 16th. Shaq and I both went to the same company, A Company, and we took in as sergeants in A Company, used MS and everything. For about 5 days, we were sergeants in A Company, the 16th. Now, A Company, this was a normal thing with the battalion. The companies all were separated from each other. Of course, you could walk to join them and have to HQ. Normally, you had your own lines, little two-man babies. And we'd been there about 5 days, and we were called in to the tent office place. Said it. Now you'll have to reduce the corporal because that's your more substantial rank. Said, lance sergeant wasn't a rank, it was an appointment. So we had to take our tapes off, one tape, and we were corporals.
Did you mind?
I didn't like it at all. It seemed a bit hard lines to me, you know what I mean? I resented it a bit at first, but then I realised that it might be just as pretty well, because we don't know the form in any case. We're still learning, and there's always a chance we can work and get them back again, you know.
Who was your company commander in A Company at the time?
That was Will Hay.
What were your first impressions of him?
Alan, Major Hay. We didn't meet much of them, the officers. The other sergeants, we didn't meet a great deal of them either. There was a little Irishman, he was company sergeant major, forget his name, but he wasn't a regular, he wasn't a regular, soldier major, but he wasn't originally a gentleman, I don't know where he had come from. I never got to know any of them very well.
What about your platoon commander?
He was changing all the while. He lost those one more with more than a little, you know. I never got to know any of you, any platoon commander well, all my time with the 16th. And then I couldn't remember names. I can remember faces and things that happened with them. I never got close to any of them.
Did the battalion make you, or your A Company make you welcome, in the sense of, did you feel like you fitted in, or did you feel a bit...
Not at the beginning, because it was a strange thing. They were infantrymen, and we were artillerymen.
What were the differences? I mean...
Well, it's hard to explain, but and they, of course we knew that they knew what infantry was about, and we didn't. We had to find out. Most of those lads and the NCOs and that had experience as infantrymen. They had battle experience as well. Now, we came there as artillerymen. I won't say we weren't made welcome, mixed in, fine with them and such, but for myself, I always knew that somehow I've got a lot to learn here.
As a corporal, were you a section leader at the start?
Major section.
How did you get on with you? I mean, some of the men in your section must have had more experience than you had.
Exactly. And that was a bit, that's the thing about it, that it made it awkward. I was never sure whether I was doing the right thing. And of course, they would realise that.
Were they all right about it? I mean, you know, were they all right? Yeah.
Oh, yes, I had no trouble with them. And they were younger soldiers, of all of them. I never made any names out of them. I never got close to anyone in the 16th period. You never had time, sort of. I met lots, but they were acquaintances more than comrades, as you might say. But that was a slang, being an NCO and learning where they already knew. You always had it in the back of your mind, and you were checking up, would this be right? And it wasn't easy to find out from anybody else.
Now, did you find Lieutenant Johnson straight away? Because he was there.
No. I don't exactly remember when I came across it. I never heard of him being with the battalion, but he must have been with the battalion with one of the other companies. But with them being spread out, as I say, He didn't get much contact with the remainder of the battalion.
So you didn't know he was with them?
No, and he probably didn't know I was with them, or he would look me. But anyway, eventually, I know, just, where was it? Like I say, platoon commanders are changing out of mind. And my first platoon commander wasn't Frank by any means. I would have known that.
Now, while you were at Bastada, they had a sort of grand fete, a sort of whole, like fairs and races and football and everything, like a sports day, only more so. Do you remember that at all?
I don't remember a great deal about it.
You were there while it was on, though.
I'm not at all sure whether I was or whether I got there just after they finished it. We spent all our time, the time we were there resting, as it was called, waiting to move in the line. It was that old football game, 25-a-side football, outside the land. That was our entertainment. We threw the ball out, one ball and kicked it. I couldn't bowl. That was the entertainment we had. There was nothing to drink, you couldn't get anywhere. No beer. You go scrounging around a little bit, see if you could get a bit vino, but there were so many soldiers on the boat, you were looking at whatever you got, you know. Vino, rosé, vino, bianca. Just scrounged out of the farmhouse or something. Little farmhouses up around the boat. But of course, they wanted it for themselves too.
Now, the battalion began to move up towards the Germans' Gothic line. What do you remember about the move? I know you're a bit vague on village names, not surprisingly. What do you remember about the move up?
Not a great deal. It was just it was a boring sort of thing. You got on a 3-ton truck and they took you so far, and then you got off. You were in battle order, of course.
What was battle order?
Your small pack, your ammunition pouches, and your rifle, 50 rounds of ammunition, Bren magazines in your pouches and so on.
What would you carry? A
couple of 36 grenades.
What would you carry in your small pack?
Everything that you needed to live with, your knife, fork, spoon and mess tins, that was your main thing. And you had a water bottle on your belt, of course.
And where would you leave your main? Yeah, where would you leave your main pack?
They were left at Tuishland, I would think would be. That was the rear. The rear of the battalion. We kept all the main, a kit bag and big pack and such like. That was
So you go forward on the 3-tonner, and then what?
Well, we've got to a certain point. It's the dismount, right? Form up in sections. We're moving forward. Like I say, all groups never seem to happen. We just said, moving forward. We move forward. Then if it looked like we had any trouble, say, right, we're going to occupy up there, you know, and you might hear a few bangs or something if you get shell fire. You'd move forward. Somebody would say, right, dig in. You'd start digging a slit trench. And you might be there a couple of hours and say, right, we're moving forward. Right, dig in, form an all-round defence. You dig in, you get a slit trench dug, you might be there a fortnight, or you might not. You were not a fortnight, say 5 or 6 days, or you might be there a couple of hours.
How deep and wide and what dimensions would the slit trench be you'd normally dig out for yourself?
Once the shelling started proper, you went as deep as you bloody could, as fast as you could. But with this normal slit trench, you get about 5 foot across. And not 2 foot if you could avoid it, the narrower the better. But it normally enough for two of you. Two of you used to normally work together, dig a slit trench for two. And mostly in where I dug in Italy, it was cultivated ground. So it wasn't very difficult digging a hole. I'd be a pitman, I could use a pretty spade and a shovel and a pick. So some of the lads didn't know how.
And you'd have them on the truck, the 3-tonner? You'd
carried a trenching tool on your belt. And a trenching tool had a blade at one end and a point at the other end and a handle about that long. And that you'd use yourself.
Was that good enough to dig a quick slit?
No, really. We finished up later on. We had spades. You used to carry a spade home on your back of your small pack. Now, it was a spade with a shortened handle. You had a normal spade head. You chopped the handle more or less in half so that it was easier to carry. You know?
And where would you get a pick from? Would you have any of them with you?
No, you just spade in to get into the spade.
Now, before the Germano battle, do you remember any of the skirmishes before that?
Not done lot, but every now and again we'd get to in somewhere and there'd be shell fire, mainly shell fire, and we would stop. You were told very little, as I said, you hardly knew what was going on, but you knew that you had to be ready for anything happening. But I don't think until it was before Germano was somewhere. And I never I heard machine guns, but never saw any small arms fire till somewhere before Germano, where we got the order all the grain guns had to get back to one spot to line us up. And we had to fire all the grain guns, rapid fire, for as long as we could on this hill in front of us. And there was nothing to say, I couldn't see anything on the hill, but that's what we had to do, hit the hill. And I could see that them falling short. I knew mine wasn't, but I knew that there was a lot of them were falling short, they weren't hitting the hill. And I thought, well, it'd be ridiculous, this, you know.
Why were they falling short? Not aiming high enough?
I would think so. Or maybe like an experience with the Bren. Well, the Bren for me went, you know.
And you were on the Bren, were you?
I was in charge of a Bren then. At that particular time, I'd been a section corporal. We realised we didn't have the experience. So there was a corporal in charge of the section. I was a corporal in charge of the Bren. I had a Bren gunner and number two. My brain, when I had already seen that his sights were set correct, you know, and I was watching his form of shot as much as anything. I knew he was all right, but I knew that there was a lot that wasn't. So, whether they had their sights wrong, whether it was lack of experience, or what, I wouldn't know. But it seemed so futile to me. And no one seemed to do anything about it. And like I say, I wasn't an infantryman.
And no one knew what was going on?
Well, I didn't. Suppose there was a reason, that would be a reason for it. It was supposed to be occupied, and we were going to move on to it.
But you did.
Which we did do. But it had been occupied, but it was nothing there when we got on it.
What about the food you got? What, the rations, infantry rations, what was that like?
Mainly McConaughey. Tins and what do you say now, Irish stew. Something very similar to Irish stew. Odd times you get tins of bacon, you get something called for a breakfast meal or something. You got meals on the doctor, and the fuller sergeant would get them up. You might go 3 parts of a day and have no to eat. Just if they came, you got them.
Did you get compo rations up, you know?
Later on.
But not?
Packs. Cardboard packs. And they had odds and ends in. They had dried porridge, dried up sort of thing, and tea, sugar and milk, and toilet paper, and then I think back to the things before they got to us, and odd, bacon I enjoyed the most. We got tin bacon, I could eat that raw over the tins. Oh, milk, you see, we get some tins of, well, it must have been Yank milk. The tins were the colour of the Yank uniforms, you know. And that was nice, like sort of evaporated milk, but it wasn't sweet. You get quite a sort of a lot of that, where that came from, I don't know. And now we've got it. That affected you when he went for a rear, it was right. So, No, I don't remember much about Grum. Like I say, there was I've never been a connoisseur, but I've got something to eat. Still a little bit, not really.
Now, the next thing is probably then when you moved up into the Germano area. I don't know if you could set the scene of what happened there, because you got stonked almost straight away, didn't you? If you could tell us the story.
I remember we... I don't know where we had come from. We had never had this morning forward again. 3-ton lorries. They took us so far forward and dropped us off formal. Moving in. And I found out later it was a place called Villa, just below Germano. Now we were moving up in line with it. And by that time Shaka left me, he was a section commander in C Company. C Company were in front of us at that particular time. We were moving up in line, which was section by section by section, you know, and company HQs in between. We were moving up there where the shelling started and really watering. And it was heavy, it was really massive. The pretty place was alive then. But we just kept on moving up, you know. It hot down again and move a bit and then hot a bit and then move a bit. And there was stomping away all the time and mortar shells. And a pass shack. We'd already lost one or two goats with the mortar shell and I put a pass shack on the road. And I knew it was Shaq, but I'd seen him lying there, you know. There's nothing you do about it. I had to just keep moving with my section, following the next section.
He was dead.
Well, I knew he wouldn't be. But there was nothing you could do about it. I had to keep going. And we moved on. We moved like that practically right the way into Germano, and we were more than nearly all the way.
Well, I mean, that was your first time, really, under proper fire, I should imagine.
The heaviest, certainly the heaviest.
How did you feel? I mean, did it make you nervous, or...?
Oh, yes. I'm pretty nervous. No doubt about that. Anybody says they weren't, they were telling really lies. But there's nothing. You kept going. You knew we were moving up to occupy this ground. We probably told we were. I don't recollect, but we knew we were.
Now, had you gone past this village of Villa towards the village of Germano, or what?
We were in the Villa vicinity, the winding track from Villa to Germano. Germano was on Poplar Hill. That's Germano village itself. It was a bigger place than the Villa. Villa was a little place below.
So you were moving from where to where while you were being stonked?
We moved from the 3-tonner. It started halfway to Villa, and it kept on right until we got into Germano.
Right, past Villa and up on...
Up into Germano itself.
Mm. Were there many other casualties?
There was, but it was hard to say where and when. When we got up into Germano, we occupied it. We moved into the buildings, and the particular building I moved into... It was only at one side where it meant it was shell fire, and that was from the jellies on the hill opposite. It had a big black cross on it. And also in there, you could get down into the cellar of this particular building. And you could get a bit protection there, and you could... There were big old-fashioned stone walls, so they had quite a bit protection. And where there was a hole in the wall, you could... observed from there to the jelly positions. You couldn't see much of them, but you knew they were firing from there. You could see the flashes and that, you know. And we were stuck in that building quite a while. We must have been there 4 or 5 days. But we were doing patrols up and such. But at the same time, we were stuck there. We didn't get much proof there because we were in a shell and mortar fire most of the time. It would slacken off a bit, and it would start up again. And I went back, I think we went to pick some grub up. They had got They transported some group to near us at the bottom of the hill of the Germano. And I think we've gone back to pick that up and bring back up to the company, about half a dozen of us. And Shaq was still lying there, my mate. He's still lying there on the side of that road. By then he was black. You know, I still couldn't. There was nothing you could do about it, you know. By that time, of course, as well, Frank Johnson was my platoon commander.